Hello, this is The Leg Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel pound Linux Show. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
And we're back.
It's The Linux Show for what day? It's Tuesday, November 5th?
4th.
We drank the fifth.
November 432nd.
Yes, I 2003. I'm just a little confused today. I'll apologize to everybody now. The state of my technology where I am at right now is a complete disaster. So if I all of a sudden disappear, who knows? I mean, I've got lightning storms ringing me right at the moment, so it's been an interesting afternoon to say the least. But we are The Linux Show. We're back from our one-week hiatus. We meant to do the show last week, but I had some personal family problems, and I'm the one who normally does that trivia thing that we do on Halloween, and plain and simple, because of personal family problems, and things blowing up in my face. I just did not have the time to put the trivia contest together last week. We will do it as soon as I have the opportunity to actually sit down now that I am back. I will put together the information and post it at the website as soon as is possible. And so look for that in the very near future. But it is November. Another month bites the dust. And we've got some exciting things that are going to be happening over the course of the next couple of weeks. We've actually got a couple of new sponsors that are going to be starting next week. Just got a check in the mail today from one sponsor. Love that. We just have to finalize all the details on what they're looking for their money before I actually cash the check. Don't want to totally prostitute myself, just halfway prostitute. But you'll be seeing more people supporting us. It's really getting exciting that people are actually stepping forward once again. The economy must be picking up if people are putting budget into things like advertising once again. So that's a bright note for the IT field. Everybody is back tonight. So we'll just run around the table real quick and say hi to everybody. Hi, Doc. How are you?
I'm fine. Our crisis today is I thought the sump pump had gone under the house we were taking, and it was pouring water the clothes washer downstairs empties into was backed up. It turned out I'm not making any sense here, but what I'm getting to is that it was backed up with sewage. It wasn't what I thought it was, and
ew.
It was spilled all over the floor down there. Fortunately, it's kind of a basement-y area, but it is also, you know, living working quarters, and it's really bad and it stinks, and I've had to throw away clothes, and oh my god, it's pretty nasty. And today was deadline day for Linux Journal too, so
of course,
and then of course, you know, in the middle of this, well, actually, the beginning of this, I didn't find out about it because I was busy not looking at my email for 3 hours. That, you know, Novell goes and buys Susie, and like, oh my god.
Well, yeah, probably the biggest news day of the year.
Yeah, the biggest news days of the year for sure. Probably, maybe there were some big ones earlier, but that comes on the heels, of course, of Red Hat saying they're not going to support Red Hat anymore. So it's like, wait a minute, and it's like, yeah. So, needless to say, it's been a real, real, real busy day.
Yeah, that's curious. We're going to be discussing both of those stories. But, Doc, I'm just happy that you're in one piece. I mean, when you consider what has happened to San Bernardino County in general.
Arnie's a lot closer to that than I am, man. Santa Barbara's the only county that had no fires, and that's the county I'm in. But we got the smoke. We got smoke.
We sent it your way, Doc.
Yeah, but Arnie, you could see them from where you are, couldn't you?
What do you mean? You could see the flames from the front yard.
Yeah, and did you read the LA Times this morning?
No, I didn't. I didn't get a chance.
Well, now is the time for all our listeners in Southern California to go out or go on Amazon or someplace and buy John McPhee's book, The Control of... It's has a whole section called Los Angeles versus the San Gabriel Mountains, and it's about what happens after a fire when you have rain, which is these things called debris flows,
yep.
Which is basically the mountains come down fast in a big slosh all over everything, and it's really going to be bad this winter. Really.
Yeah, especially if the what we need is a major rain event, like what do they call it, Spanish?
An El Nino.
El Nino.
Yeah. Well, all it's going to take is like 3 or 4 inches overnight, and oh my gosh, Rancho Cucamonga and Monrovia and places like that are going to be inundated with mud. It's going to be real bad.
I live in northern Ontario, which is adjoining both Rancho Cucamonga and Upland.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, if you look, just go online and look at the LA Times today, there's a huge piece about how the debris catch basins, which are like these empty reservoirs at the base of the canyons and the mountains that are supposed to catch boulders and keep them from rolling down onto the towns, are probably going to get filled, and it's not a good thing. It's going to be real bad, real bad.
Yeah.
So this thing is not over by a long shot. I'm not there, though. It's like, I'm sorry, Artie. It's your job.
I'll just keep the boulders would be nice. I'll just set up a fence in the front yard to capture them as they roll by.
Before there was civilization, there were boulders that would roll off the San Gabes and go like 15 or 20 miles down the alluvial fan.
That would get as far as my house.
Yeah. Oh, easy.
Yeah, because I'm like right in the shadow of Mount Baldy.
Yeah.
In the Cucamonga Peaks.
Yep. Well, how are things on the other coast, Russ?
Well, they're a lot quieter than that, that's for sure. Things here have been unusual in that, here is the beginning of November, and we hit 80 degrees yesterday in the greater Washington area, which actually set a record. That's awfully warm for us this time of year.
Yeah, it was almost 80 here yesterday, and today we've had like 5 inches of rain.
We're supposed to be getting lots of moisture and considerably colder weather come the next 24 to 36 hours.
That's right, yeah. They're talking the possibility of snow by the end of the week.
Oh.
Wahoo, November in Chicago. Just blink and the weather changes. It's really incredible here. But that's just the way it is. Well, let's go ahead and jump right into the first segment. I would like to sort of delay the conversation about Novell and Sousa for a while. There is the possibility that right at about 8:30, one of our old buds, Mark Torres, might be calling in at 8:30 to, as the former president of Sousa, he's a good one to talk to about his 2 cents worth on this recent merger, which I find one of the most fascinating and interesting stories of the entire year. It's such a multifaceted thing that we could literally devote the entire show just to that story if we wanted to, but we'll put it off till about 8:30 because there's plenty of other things to talk about tonight, and we'll go ahead and jump on into the first segment. Doc, have you got anything you want to talk about your road trip tonight?
Oh, geez. Well, the most interesting thing from that, I went to the Digital ID World, which is concerns itself with digital identity, where I did the closing keynote where I was a pariah, saying that, you know, that it kind of all about the individual, and if it's not, basically if there isn't an open source strategy being done by real people out in the real world, it ain't going to matter. The big boys aren't going to be able to do it themselves. That's my message to that one. The Enterprise Architect Summit, which is very interesting, because there was a guy there from an earlier speaker from, McKinsey, who asked the people in the audience, how many people spent more than, like, $10 million on IT a year, and like well over half the hands went up. It's like these are big boys, real big boys. And I asked them in my talk how many of them were using Linux, and approximately all of them were. So, you know, that was a pretty interesting thing. And we talked about architecture as a whole other subject. And in the third case, it was an an ISP show, not ISP Con on the East Coast, but a smaller ISP show in Las Vegas, which was where I gave the opening keynote, and that was an interesting thing. Elliot Noss of Two Cows gave the closing one, and I really liked his talk. He was very optimistic about what small ISPs can do. That basically his message was that the big carrier type ISPs, the cable companies of the world and the Verizons of the world, were not very interested in providing a great many services to individuals, but basically just delivering the bits, and that there's a lot of opportunity for services and to make money and lots of other things on the part of the small ISP, which is an encouraging thing to hear, because those are the guys that kind of started this whole thing. So,
well, yeah, that really is very interesting, because ISPCon is really making a comeback as a show. It was literally dead 2 years ago. And it really is primarily motivated, the revival of it, by the small ISP. Because, what was it, Penton Media a couple years ago acquired it. Who's managing it this year? Is it still
no idea. I don't know.
Okay, but...
it's moved from one to another.
Yeah, but Penton had it a couple
people
years.
People seem to like it.
And Penton focused the entire show on big, huge, telecommunications-style ISPs,
yeah.
Not the small mom-and-pop. And within 2 or 3 years of operating the expo, it was dead. It was dead. And it's really interesting to see that they redirected themselves into the original premise of which when Boardwatch magazine originally founded that show many, 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 many years ago. And it's starting to see a revival. And I would have loved to have been there this year. Actually, I was supposed to cover it, but couldn't get the time off from college. But what I wanted to do is go there and just talk to some of the small ISPs about the new court decisions that have come down in the last month and a half, that it's going to be within 12 months, the cable companies are going to be forced to open up their networks to the small local ISPs. And I think that's going to be complete change of the way we now see internet service. I mean, here I am, I got cable internet like probably most of you do. I got cable internet, and it's with this telecommunications provider, Wide Open West, and they're completely focused on vanilla consumer service, and I happen to be one of their few static IP customers.
Mm.
And the irony is, I can't do anything with it. They've got all the ports shut down, and so I'm paying them $20 a month for a couple static IPs that are totally worthless.
Oh, they shut down on the static IPs?
Yeah.
That's the way, yeah, I pay like $38 a month to Cox for their home service where port 80 and 25 are shut down. But I pay another $90 a month for their business service, which has lower speed, by the way. I mean, the home service is 3 megabits down, 300 kilobits up. The business is 1.5 down and 250 up. And, wait a minute, why do you want 250 up? I'd rather have it the other way around, on the server side.
That's
what I
right.
want. I want the business for the static. So, I've got several servers sitting around here that I would love to put pictures and other things on, and what's even the point if you're going to be doing it at 250? In any case, they give me 5 static addresses, but they want my MAC addresses first, and, so I move things around, I got to call them on the phone, and they don't answer, and it's like, they say, well, we're going to give you 24/7 support on the business line, and that's, $99 a month for worse support than you get on the home line, because they actually have customers there. They don't really have many business.
And the irony is that with the new algorithms that are being used on the V92 modems,
mm-hmm.
the cable service isn't that much faster because it's so overpopulated.
People have been telling me that for years, that it's overpopulated. I never have any service degradation. It's binary. It's either there or not there. Now, it does go off a fair amount.
Okay. Just a few minutes ago, the cable service man left my house because I've been down for 2 weeks.
Oh, my God.
And they finally got the interference fixed on the line. And supposedly we have 4 megabit service. But as soon as the guy walked out the door, I linked up with bandwidth.com and did a line check, and I'm getting about 256K.
Oh, my God.
And paying almost $100 a month for it. So there you go. But, there's no question that the future is still very, very bright for those of the mom and pops that have been able to find their little niches to hang on to, because with them opening up the cable companies, with the courts telling the FCC, you're screwy, the cable companies are an incumbent local exchange carrier no matter what you say, FCC, and that the rules that the FCC has set up for the phone companies now have to apply to the cable companies, that's big news for the ISP community. That really is big news.
Yeah.
It's totally exciting as far as I'm concerned. It's nothing, got nothing but dollar signs on it for people who are inventive and can create niche-based business models. So anything else, Zach?
I'll stop it there so we can get on to the other stuff. Because I turned into a pumpkin around 7, so.
Oh, okay. All right. Russ, let's take it over to you. What stories have you got for us this week?
Yeah, I seem to have most of the ones on the Linux World or the Linux Show website tonight, so folks can look there at for the links. First one is a story from eWeek, which tries to pit Longhorn, the Microsoft's next door-busting operating system offering, against Linux.
Can you speak up a little bit, Russ? Your levels are pretty low.
Okay. Here, let's try for that. Is that better?
That's way better.
All righty. It's an article which tries to compare Longhorn, Windows, the Windows to be operating system, against the 2.6 kernel, which is coming out. And it's kind of a fluffy piece, but it's an interesting one in that it does kind of show the battle as it's shaping up. It also shows some of the rhetoric that's out there, including Craig Mundy from Microsoft saying, "I don't think Linux kernel developers tell the community what their vision is." It's pretty remarkable how entirely clueless some of these comments are. But it's an interesting beast. There's a lot of strange thoughts going on here, including the fact that, you know, some people are saying it's not going to be 2.6 versus Longhorn, it's going to be 2.6's successor, which is probably 3.0, which will probably be out around the same time that Longhorn actually emerges from the vapor. But it's interesting that it is, this is the type of mindshare that's going out there in business, and we need to be aware of it.
Yeah, typical Rick Mundy stuff, that's for sure.
Next one up, which was one of the stories listed in the post tonight, has to do with Red Hat. And Red Hat standing off from Red Hat Linux and announcing discontinuation of support within the next 6 months, basically, for just about everything that they've done other than their enterprise server.
Yeah.
And, that's got its ups and downs. I mean, part of the whole Fedora project is that it gives the community a whole lot more influence on the Red Hat development. But the downside is that it really becomes a development project and not the sort of low-level supported Red Hat Linux that we've been used to for a long time. In particular, the fact that there's not going to be the errata support and the regular maintenance upgrades are going to be things that people are going to be, well, very interested in, even if it's a negative sort of thing.
Okay, but we can look at this a lot of different ways. We really can. Everybody on the panel, feel free to jump in on this, because I think this is obviously one of the most intriguing stories of the month, for sure. But we are coming out of a recession right now. People are starting to spend money on IT acquisitions again. People are starting to spend money on IT training again. And so you could look at this as Red Hat positioning themselves specifically for the enterprise market. And also, really, if you think about it in a positive way, this is really a golden opportunity for people who are entrepreneurial out there to come out with Fedora products and provide those kind of services that you were talking about for small business. And so although it's definitely the end of an era, in fact, it's a lot of ways a little frightening, it really is an opportunity as well, I think.
Red Hat's been wanting to do this for some time, I think. I think they've been wanting to become the big stable, big distribution. And you saw that, we saw that early on in getting rid of the, or shedding the support for the low-end Linux things. I think they see that as not much of a risk, because Red Hat is popular enough that it's going to be picked up by somebody, and I think that they're not afraid of that, I don't think, and I'm not sure I'm afraid of it either. I'd like to see what happens.
Are they, how do I want to phrase this, are they telling Lycoris and Lindos, here, you can have the desktop business?
Well, I mean, even the recent announcement that they see Windows as a desktop system. Well, I mean, everybody sees Windows as a desktop system because that's where they're positioned. But it's kind of stating the obvious. But I think they're saying that if there's a desktop, we don't want to get in that market right now. We want to stay on doing the enterprise. I don't see this as a negative thing.
Yeah, I think also in the desktop market that they never really had that many sales. I think that's the whole point. They stopped selling the box set. And I think while everybody's freaking out about the name change, I think a lot of people who are using Red Hat now are just going to relatively painlessly switch to Fedora.
Yeah, well, Fedora is Red Hat.
Yeah.
So.
And also an interesting loophole. Is while you have to pay for Enterprise Linux, you can download all of the source RPMs and compile them and use the resulting clone of Enterprise Linux for
yeah.
free.
The only thing that they will not be making available is binaries.
Yeah.
At least for now. That could change. Who knows? I was a little bit concerned when the story first broke that. It's the timing of this is what really sort of spooks me, and I was wondering if perhaps Red Hat was jumping now as a reaction to what's going on over with SCO, or do you think that had no bearing?
I think it had no bearing.
No bearing?
I agree, no bearing.
I think that I don't know, I have very mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, I really want it to succeed. I want it to succeed for the SUSE guys, I want it to succeed for the Zimian guys. I had a really good talk with Nat Friedman of Zimian at something called Foo Camp for Friends of O'Reilly that O'Reilly threw about a month ago. And an interesting story there, because I saw on his weblog that he was headed to Foo Camp in Portland, and I wrote to him saying, dude, it's not in Portland, it's near San Francisco. And he wrote back saying, you saved my ass, I was getting ready to get on a plane in the wrong city. But anyway, he was on his way to India, where they're working with a lot of developers on desktop Linux, on GNOME, and carrying GNOME forward and doing device drivers, all kinds of stuff. And he was very upbeat and optimistic and said that he had a lot of good synergy with the Novell guys, and that they were very much supporting desktop Linux one way or the other. But, you know, I mean, if Intel's not releasing the Centrino device drivers and there aren't laptop makers making these things, you know, I don't know. You know, I got a bunch of email from people telling me that they think that, you know, desktop Linux is now dead. It ain't going to happen. You know,
desktop Linux will never be dead.
Well, it is not. It depends on what you call dead. I mean,
it might be dead as a commercial product right
now.
Yeah,
I mean, it's certainly
not dead.
I mean, you're not going to go down to Fry's and buy a desktop. I mean, a laptop. Because there's interesting things happening in the desktop market, which is, you know, your power users are using laptops now. They're not. I mean, you know, if you want a 1600 by 1200 flat screen, you buy a laptop with it these days. You know, I mean, that's the way it is. I mean, there's, you know, when you've got a laptop that can burn DVDs and, you know, has a 100 gigabyte hard drive and is fast enough, then that's what a lot of power users are using. I mean, whether you're Linux or not. I mean, talking about most people who want a desktop are these days want a laptop, and offices in companies, you know, there are these white box cubicleware is sort of where the desktop is going, and at home, you know, it's sort of mushing over into the consumer electronics space. I mean, right now, if you go to Costco, at least our Costco here, there's like a $900, something like a 6x9 aspect ratio screen. It's like 1440 by 990 or something like that for about $900. And it's a monitor. And it just happens to have a TV tuner in it.
I've seen it. It's pretty neat.
It's pretty neat. I mean, but think of what that says, that, oh, by the way, it's
off
monitor.
Brand.
Oh, by the way, it's got a TV tuner in it. It's like Sampro or something like that.
Yeah, it's some name that, you know, you never heard of.
It looks great.
But is,
I mean,
it an HD TV tuner?
It's an HD. Well, yeah, well, they had whether you're getting an HD TV composite signal off the dish receiver into the thing, and it's showing HDTV of whatever density that happens to be.
Oh, that's pretty
cool. But the interesting thing, yeah, it's like, you know, here's your computer monitor that's also your television, that's also your HDTV screen, and the whole desktop space is breaking into these niches right now. And, I mean,
it's moving towards ubiquitous and pervasive computing.
You know, it's not orthodox or anything, but, you know, I'm sitting here, my main machine is an OS X laptop, you know. I mean, it does a whole pile of stuff, and you know, we were having a big conversation at the, on the Geek Cruise, and maybe we went over this before, I don't remember, but, you know, that, you know, with guys from HP and from other companies, and from IBM, you know, the problem right now is that if you want to do, let's say, play a DVD on a laptop, if you're getting a Windows or a Mac laptop, they have the relationships. You know, those OEMs have the relationships with NVIDIA and ATI to allow the DVD player to relate directly to the graphics board and not involve the CPU. And that's the company-to-company kind of relationship that's contractual and full of all kinds of IP, as an intellectual property. And the kind of, you know, kind of consumer electronics-level deals that get done here. And that's what Intel wants to support. You know, they're not really interested in throwing everything open out there for everybody to, you know, anybody can make a laptop. They don't want a white box laptop out there. So, shit, I don't know. I mean, I want to have one. I want to see one out there, but there are certain areas right now where the open source community is not going. because it can't, because the too many of the players involved are these closed proprietary guys, and I'm talking about the Dells and IBMs and HPs and Apples on one side and the ATIs and NVIDIAs on the other, and Intel sitting in the middle saying we'll be glad to help you guys do device drivers for either of those. We're just not going to float these things out in the marketplace, you know. And so that's, and on top of which they're not fixing ACPI yet either very well. So
I'm waiting for device drivers for my ATI thing. I mean, I've got some functionality, but much of the stuff just doesn't work. I mean,
yeah,
the Radeon cards are not supported in Linux at all.
Yeah, so I mean,
and the Gatos project is a nightmare. I mean,
you know, and I'm putting together a list of headlines from Red Hat, you know, and there's a series of them that are, you know, we're taking on Microsoft on the desktop and so forth. And now the latest is from yesterday in ZDNet. Red Hat recommends Windows for consumers, from Matt Zulick.
Well, that's something eWeeks and ZDNet are going to print anyway. I mean, all someone has to do is mention Windows in conjunction with Linux, and eWeek or ZDNet are going to feature a big headline on it.
Well, they're quoting Matt Zulick, you know, saying, I would say that for the consumer marketplace, Windows probably continues to be the right product line. What a weird thing to say, you know. And he's making this distinction, you know, consumers want USB drivers and digital camera support, but for the enterprise desktop, that's a little different. That area is ripe. And so, you know, he's aiming for the enterprise desktop. Well, where is Novell aiming for?
I don't know.
And on top of which, now, some of the people I talked to, including Craig Bergen, who used to run strategy in Novell has never had a big successful acquisition. I mean, look what they did with Unixware, which was, you know, they paid $1 billion for Unix from AT&T and then sold it as a discount to SCO, which is like busy flooding the world right now. It's, you know, they bought WordPerfect, which is a working company, killed that. They bought B-Trees because they thought they could be a developer company. They blew that.
Bought a DOS, competitor.
Bought Dr. DOS, and where'd that go? I mean, it's not a pretty history, you know, so far. And you know, there's also a cultural thing. I'm just wondering how well, I mean, maybe Boston could get along better with Germany than Utah can. I don't even know. I mean,
well, I find the assembly of the players in this deal, we might as well start talking about the Novell deal. It's 8:30, and if he's going to call, he'll call right about now.
Yeah.
But I think when you look at it, there's a lot of different pictures you can take from this Novell deal. Doc, you're absolutely right. Novell has not had the best track record. They haven't failed at every purchase they've ever made, but they've failed at most of them.
Just the big ones.
Yeah, the big ones.
You know, like the big ones.
Well, but this isn't really a big purchase.
Yeah.
Really, it's
$200 million.
It's $200 million. Okay.
Yeah.
$200 million. It's not chump change, but still, it's certainly not. You know, well, it's not serious money. It's not $1 billion. You know, but
right.
But let's look at the total package on this of all the timing involved with it. And everything else that's going on in the Linux community. I mean, it's not like we weren't aware of what was going on with Fedora, right? We knew that was coming. We may not have known all the details of how soon they were going to discontinue support of Red Hat Linux, but we knew something was up. Okay, we knew they've been telling us for the last couple of years. We're specializing in the enterprise. And so, think of it this way. Think of your IBM, and you're looking at what's going on over at Red Hat, and you're looking at the situation with SCO. The opportunity to buy back into Novell at the time of a purchase of a company like SUSE Linux provides IBM with an awful lot of hedge coverage.
And don't forget, IBM supports SUSE Linux. Red Hat. And what's the other one? Yeah,
well,
that's one of their mainstream distributions.
Right.
And so this is just a good thing. I see the Novell purchase as very important. And this, I was, when I saw that, I said, "Oh, right. This is the biggest news since IBM announced a $1 billion investment in Linux." And the reason is because Novell has long ago been dabbling in Unix. Years and years. And they have a Unix development team already in-house. What better way to leverage that with especially with NetWare kind of in a sunset mode? What better way to leverage that than to take on something like Linux?
This
is really a good move for them.
First of all, NetWare is not in the sunset mode.
Well,
okay,
but you know it's
that is probably the most wrong assumption that not only us in the Linux community but the people in the Microsoft community make as well. Novell is still holding a 25% solid market share in vertical market professions.
But they've always been dabbling. Even as my experience with NetWare was in the version 3, version 4 era, and even then they were playing around with using Unix as a base for their NetWare.
Yes, and
in fact, version 4 came out with even substantially Unix technology behind them, and this is a way to get it all together, with an inexpensive kernel.
Yeah, I also find this very interesting that this all happens on the heels of not only a major contract between Novell and IBM, but it happens on the heels of an investment of $60 million by IBM. So you've got two cash flow channels of IBM providing cash into Novell. And what are they doing with that cash? They're buying SUSE. And that really makes you think that this is, without question, a big picture hedge. Because what is really totally 100% unique about Novell? Anybody want to guess?
Okay. Now bite.
Okay. They are not subject to the IP issues of SCO.
Yeah,
they're grandfathered in. Novell has license to everything SCO owns.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so this provides IBM with a second layer of coverage. Totally hedges them out.
Oh, you mean that they can indemnify their customers.
Right. Now you're catching on. So I think that's why I think this is a really, really incredibly complex negotiation that we're only seeing the surface of right now. There are at least half a dozen different angles that you can pull apart this this purchase on.
I see it being a positive thing for SUSE, because SUSE will have a. They might have
210 million dollars in cash. It's got to be a positive thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's important is also that they have the Novell technical people, and I think that's a good merger. I think it's a good fit. You know, a lot of people on the chat room are, saying, "Oh, Novell's everything I do is failure," and everything. You know, hey, quite frankly, that's. True.
Well, it's just not true. I mean,
like you say, the NetWare is still successful, but I'm talking about the technology on which the old NetWare was based, more or less.
But the intra NetWare version 4.11 was an extremely successful product.
Yeah, I ran that.
And there are still a hell of a lot of users out there of the 4.11 product.
It's stable.
I walk into offices all the time that are still running that 4.11 intranetware. Quite a few users of 5.0 as well, but calling Novell NetWare a dead animal is a real underestimation of what's the reality in the market. So Russ, let's get back to you. Any more stories? We sort of cut you off in the middle there.
Yeah, I just got a couple of quickies. One, we were talking about the future of Linux on the desktop. Our buddy Bruce Perrins sent us a link today that's on the webpage about a desktop Linux conference being held at Boston University next Monday. And for people who are in the area and are interested, this might very well be a very interesting thing to attend. I'd love to hear whether they're going to have any more details about what Novell's going to do in this area now that they're expanding their field. And Nat Friedman's already scheduled to speak originally from Zimian and now being part of Novell. So it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. So that's one thing of interest for people in that area. And the other one, and I don't want to put Doc on the ropes here. I don't know if...
Sure, let's put Doc on the ropes.
Yeah, and I know where you're going. I can't talk about it.
Yeah, I
part of it is I just, I only heard about it yesterday. I don't know anything about it, and I'd be way out of school if I said anything about it. So I can't.
Well, let's just throw it out so people understand what we're talking about, and that is that Linux Gazette, which is one of the, I guess the oldest existing Linux periodical run entirely by volunteers for years, had been hosted by SSC, the publishers of Linux Journal, and it has changed its hosting arrangement now, so it's going somewhere else, but it appears that Linux Journal is still going to be maintaining something which it will be referring to as Linux Gazette. So there is the potential here for a fork in the publication. So it'll just, I think this is one of those stories that's still in the making, and we're only seeing part of it, and hopefully in the next few weeks maybe we'll see something a little bit more.
Maybe Doc can talk about it next week.
Yeah, well, I'm just hoping that things get worked out. There now exists in the world something called LinuxGazette.net and another thing called LinuxGazette.com, which is the one operated by Linux Journal, or by SSC, rather. But beyond that, I really, there's obviously there's some kind of problem there and needs to be worked out, so.
Hopefully this is nothing more than a bump in the road in the history of Linux Gazette, and hopefully things will be worked out before too long.
Linux Gazette has always been one of my favorite reads, and when they get the new issue up, I always browse through it because there's a lot of good information in there. And like you say, Russ, it's been a volunteer type thing for many, many years.
You know, I think Linux Gazette's one of the things that's kind of been lost in the hubbub and the growth of the community. I don't think a lot of people even realize it's out there anymore, despite the fact that, as Arnie was saying, it's still got some magnificent stuff that appears in it from time to time.
You want to look for a how-to for that obscure thing? Go to the Linux Gazette site and search, and you find a lot of good stuff.
And Linux Gazette also happens to be the first, I think the first Linux periodical I ever wrote for. I did a couple of articles back then.
Really?
Yeah, way long ago.
That goes back, huh? That goes back a while then?
Like 97.
Wow.
And
ancient history.
Yeah, in this industry, yeah. So I have a warm spot there. But also, just for people who haven't had the opportunity to look at Linux Gazette, this may be the perfect excuse for you to go out there and do just that.
You can download the archive of the entire history.
Or, if nothing else, just start keeping abreast with what comes down the pipe. It is free, and it's got some really good stuff in it, so... With that, I'm done.
Okay. Kevin, do you have any new release product information for us this week?
Well, look for the first release of Fedora Core. It was due out yesterday, but at the last minute they had some bugs to fix. But hopefully it'll be out sometime this week.
So when are we converting?
Sometime between now and the first of the year.
I hate conversions. So, that's it? Just Fedora?
Yeah, and also something that's coming with Fedora is a package upgrading tool called Yum. If you haven't seen it, take a look at it. It's kind of like apt-get, but written from the ground up to work with RPMs. It's very cool.
Yeah, I've heard lots of good stuff about Yum.
Yeah, we've been using that at work for about a year now. It's very cool.
How do you spell that?
Y-U-M.
Thank you.
It started out as Yellow Dog Linux Updater, and it's been modified.
Okay. So, Arnie.
Well, let's see.
You?
I submitted a link about the Linux Gazette, and the other link I submitted was the Novell, and the only other one I have up there is Linux Fields Dev Questions on the Future of Linux. And rather than comment in depth on this, a pretty in-depth interview with Linus Torvalds, and it's on openenterprisetrends.com, and at the Geek Cruises Linux Lunacy Cruise, these guys interviewed Linus, and they got some pretty good candid remarks from him, and it's a good read.
I should add that I don't know what document that is, but I'm at this very minute, as a matter of fact, I'm editing Linus's entire talk with his slides.
Oh,
plus
that sounds
his
cool.
Talk with the on that same cruise that he gave. It's a really long, complete. It's like almost like 10,000 words altogether. I'm sure it'll get flashed out when it gets up there, and we're late getting it up, but it will be up probably in the next few days. So watch for it.
Okay.
Also, a very long report on the cruise itself.
On the what?
On the cruise itself.
Oh, okay. That is going into the website, not the journal itself?
Yeah, on the website. Right.
Okay. All right. Well, I have a couple of interesting tidbits to throw into the mix tonight, seeing as we got a couple of extra minutes left over. I am hearing information coming out. There is a group in Chicago that is organizing, and they as of yet do not have a name, but they are organizing to respond to the third, this is now the third attack, by Microsoft's Small Business Alliance, or excuse me, Software Business Alliance. They're back in Chicago again, or they were back in Chicago again about a month and a half ago for the third time. And this most recent time around, they were standing in front of the entranceways to all of the mega high-rise buildings down in the Chicago Loop, passing out flyers that had the image of a dollar bill on them, and offering people a $10,000 reward if they would squeal on their bosses for pirated software. And this wasn't taken very positively by a number of the businesses down in the Chicago Loop, and so a few of them have banded together and are in the process of creating this organization to spread the word for people and give them the information that they need to downgrade their systems from Windows XP back to Windows 2000 or Windows 98 as a response to the attacks by Microsoft. The insider of this organization that I have talked to has told me that they have already gotten about half a dozen businesses that have pulled all of the XP off of their systems, and surprisingly enough, or maybe it's not so surprising, about 20% of them have converted to Linux and OpenOffice, which was sort of a surprise because the original emphasis of this organization was just to have people get rid of the spyware contained in XP and reinstall their old legal licenses of Windows 2000 and Windows 98. But it's been surprising that they said upwards of 15 or 20% of the people that they've gotten involved with this have already deployed some, if not many, of their computers using OpenOffice, and they're very, very, very happy with it. As soon as this organization has name and they are legally incorporated, we're going to have them as guests on the show. I would anticipate that happening sometime in December. But their hope is to sort of motivate people into starting up local cells of business owners around the United States. They are looking for, I don't have an email address, but people can feel free to email me suggestions. They are looking for a name. One of the names that they were tentatively looking at or considering was the Microsoft Liberation Front, but that almost sounds as if they're supporting Microsoft. And so they're asking around and about if anybody's got any ideas of a clever name that would be a good marketing name to please pass it on. So if you've got an idea, if you're listening to the show tonight, or if you're in the IRC and you've got a clever idea that would help them do their marketing, just go ahead and email me your suggestion to staff@thelinuxshow.com, and I will make sure that the guys in this new organization do get their hands on your suggestion. But this is apparently a very well-financed group, because I guess there's a couple of law firms that are part of this, and they are really, really pissed at Microsoft for standing in front of their building offering bribes to their employees. So it's about time something like this happened, and there's a little payback for a change. So interesting if that carries on very much further. But has anybody else got any more stories? If not, we're finished early tonight. Our guest did not arrive, Mark Torres. I'll give Mark a call after the show and see if we can have him on just for a couple minutes next week to comment on the SUSE purchase. And I'm sure the story is going to be in the news for many, many months to come.
You know, there's one aspect of the whole Novell thing that I'm interested to see how it's going to play out. And that is the fact that they purchased Zimian, who were the main guardians business-wise of the GNOME desktop, and now SUSE, which tended to be so very solidly behind the KDE desktop.
Yes, that is curious.
And it's interesting to see how that's going to play out in the days to come.
Well, with Zimian there, I don't think the GNOME desktop's going anywhere. That's for damn sure. So
I still use GNOME on Enlightenment. Of course, Enlightenment hasn't done much recently, but I still like it as it's got a lot of glitz and glamour.
Yeah, but now they've got $210 million to play with.
Yeah.
So
and I use GNOME. I don't use the desktop, but I use a lot of their attachments and stuff. You know, I don't use drag and drop too much. So, GNOME is my choice. I've never bothered running KDE. It looked too much like Windows for my taste when I first saw it, and I just never switched.
Yep. Well, some people feel that way. But on the other hand, some people like it because it looks a lot like Windows, so they can sneak it into machines in an office.
Well, nothing wrong with KDE. In fact, KDE runs really nice on my Zorus, but it's just, you know, I'm used to this.
Yep.
I don't change too much. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's for sure. We know that, Arnie.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess we'll wrap it up a couple of minutes early then tonight. Doc, we got you out of here by 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
Had to happen. Well, guest didn't show up, that's why. Well, geez, on behalf of the whole crew here at the Linux Show, make sure you come back next week. We've got a lot of announcements we're planning on making for next week. I'll give you a tease of one of them. On the website next week will be a new edition, project that Kevin and I have worked on from time to time, and we're going to take a stab at it. There's going to actually be some press releases going out later this week, and there will be a link on our website to a special fund that we are putting together to build a new device for our server room and sort of upgrade us into the future. And we anticipate being able to add significantly more phone lines. Our goal in the long term is to actually have shows where people who are users out there can call into the show. We'll probably do this like once a month once we get the technology built. We'll have it set up so it can use both IP phones and regular phones. And, hopefully, if we can get the money put together and get a couple of businesses to donate a little bit of money, we're going to significantly upgrade the phone infrastructure here, including a Gentner unit that should make the sound much cleaner in the future. So keep an eye out for that. Plus lots of more announcements during next week's show. We got some exciting news coming up very, very soon. So hang in there, everybody. Thanks for stopping by. Make sure you tell 10 friends all about the Linux Show. We'll be looking for you to come back next week. But until then, everybody, we're out of here.